Madam, all of your requested items are covered. We've got 3 vials of cursed blood, a hellfire dagger, your grandmother's sharpened broomstick, 1 dozen dead man's candles, and a tiny ebony box that I can hear laughter coming from. Will this be enough?
I see no reason to go over the top, darling. 6 dead man's candles should do.
Madam, if you are to be alone with a guest, I insist we use everything to protect you from them.
Oh, you are so kind to worry about me, Mr. Darling, but these items are meant to protect the guest from me.
That does make sense.
Well, hello, my dear. Welcome to the Midnight Library. It seems that I have you all to myself this fine evening. Let me show you to the reading room. I've set out some tea for you, and I insist that you partake of it to help you remain calm. I'm not often in the company of a lone guest, but for you, I'm happy to make an exception. Tonight, I am your sole companion, Miranda Merrick. To be honest, you should know that you and I may not be completely alone. Mr. Darling is just prowling the property, and the wolf pups are here wandering about, and Professor Steerpike, our harmless pet crow, will likely arrive at some point, and if you should hear any scratching or whispering, well, I believe we may need to get our ventilation system thing inspected. I've invited you here to share with you some candid and personal answers to some questions I've been receiving ever since we opened the Midnight Library just a little time ago. Well, you may have surmised that because the library, Mr. Darling, and our staff, and I are all atypical in our nature, and secluded here on the edge of the village as we are, well, there's a great deal of speculation that gets bandied about regarding us, but primarily me. So, I shall endeavor to be somewhat forthright and even bear a bit of my soul to you on an intimate level. It is my fondest hope that this will put you more at ease, and you'll be lured into feeling safer and more familiar with me as a as an acquaintance. Well, who knows, really? This private meeting may even create a kind of bond between us, and we may become friends. Once you're privy to some of the happenings here and understand how these things have come to be as they seem. And once I share with you little snippets from my real or imagined life, we'll be closer. And I'll make every attempt to make this personal set of answers more open and relatable, less guarded, and nearly 100% true. I'll even disclose the first names of some of those who have asked questions because, well, I figure you may know them from the village, and that will put you at ease, right? And remember, my dear guest, if at any point you feel confused or feverish, disoriented or misled, well, like I said, there seems to be a minor problem with the ventilation thing system, and just have a bit more of your tea and try to relax. Our first question comes from the wonderful Randall P. Hi, Randall. And he has asked to hear a bit more about the nature of the relationship between myself and Mr. Darling. What a good question, Randall.
Mr. Darling and I have been the best of friends for many years now, but you may be most interested to know that there exists an entire written backstory of how we first met. Not counting Mr. Darling's meeting with little Miranda, 5-year-old me. That is a current storyline within the library right now, which we hope you're enjoying, by the way. The backstory is something unique unto itself that we're all very proud of. Scott, Forrest, and Tess have all read it. It's rather long. The document is comprised of roughly 5,000 words. And yes, I know how much you would all love to read it or hear it, and it works effectively in both formats. But it is in a holding pattern until we see how the first few seasons of readings play out and are received. How we do in the ratings and feedback and support are all contributing factors. So anytime you share the show or leave feedback, you are helping. And we absolutely appreciate that. But regarding the story, I can tell you that we met when both of us were in dire circumstances, with me being imperiled in one way and Mr. Darling in another, each of us rescuing the other one. Then the pair of us embark on a journey during which, through the trading of witty exchanges whilst we travel, you witness our distinctive friendship being born. So I hope that's a satisfactory answer for now. Thank you, Randall. Our next question comes from Jake B., who has submitted several good questions, some of which I cannot answer. Thank you, Jake. He has kindly asked how I've come to know the Loremen and how our crossover show was created, and I am very happy to share this story with you. This was a happening that sort of fell out of the ether in such a wonderful way. Our Irma, the elf totally not a demon, who is a nearly lifelong friend of mine, who runs our lively Twitter account, was contacted on there, and she sent me the tweet that cheerfully went on about how the two shows and personalities of the hosts are a good match for each other. And unfortunately, I don't know who sent that tweet, so I just like to think it was forces from beyond that had their hand in a little matchmaking. But I hadn't heard of them or their show, but I did immediately make a note of listening to them, since the person making the suggestion was so certain and sincere. I do remember that. And when I did get to listen, I was taken with them inside of the first few minutes of listening. After having listened to their first season, I reached out to them to say that I was a fan, and that because that was absolutely a fact. And they were both so quick to respond and so warm and friendly towards me, saying that they were fans of the library as well. And we began a series of correspondences during which they asked if I thought a crossover project could be created. And it took me a little while to come up with a basic 8-step layout of how such a pairing of the two atmospheres could flow and mix into one. And they were wonderful, and they said they loved the layout. So I began writing an official outline for things like the premise of how they would arrive and what Darling and I would say to each other about them, and what the subject of my short story would be, and what material from it they could use for their trademark scoring portion of their show. So that's how that worked out. And then the show was created in a Zoom-style meeting, and had to be synchronized since it was being recorded in three separate locations, so that the playbacks would jive together. Aside from the folks at Astonishing Legends, the Loremen are the only other humans to catch sight of me, and they agreed not to film or screenshot my appearance for fear of being hexed. I believe I mentioned that the runtime of the recording was 2 hours long, as we were having such great fun getting acquainted, and we had to keep returning to the library to stay true to our mission. James Shakeshaft, who was about to edit the show, contacted me afterward and said, you laugh like a lot during this, and how much of that should I leave in? And I responded that he should leave in any laugh that he liked, and to remove any where I laughed over either of them speaking, which I did several times. It took 8 people in 5 states and 3 countries to Frankenstein that episode together. It all sounds so easy. Which, of course, you know, included the concept, the writing, the recording, the editing, the music, the sound design, the artwork and graphics, and then the publishing of the episode to the platform and websites, and then putting it on social media accounts for both shows. So it was a big project, and I could not be more proud of it. Scott only got to hear the completed show just before he posted it. He had no idea and no control over what we were doing. And he was over the moon happy with what we had made and crowed about it in the most delightful way. It was very touching. So thank you, Jake, for the fabulous question. The third question comes from Kat S., and she has cleverly asked, if you were a student or a teacher at Hogwarts, what would be your favorite or teaching subject? Well, I had to think on this for a bit, and I don't know that I would actually be one or the other, a student or a teacher, so much as a mysterious presence that everyone knows is there, but they can't ever really find. I would inhabit, perhaps, for a night, a certain staircase that when traversed, the person would see in their mind's eye art that I love, or hear music that stirs me to dance, or feel some sacred deep emotion that I have in regards to grief or love, or perhaps even see in a blurred flash a vision from my life that has shaped me. Maybe they would see the strange bodies of water I tend to cross in my dreams. My message would be to indulge in enriching yourself through creative pursuits such as art and literature and science, especially astronomy, so you have some idea of your celestial home. So that you're livened up and interesting to others and have something to offer them when they draw near you. And then you can love them for whatever they are. But if I were forced to teach, I would impart a life philosophy, I imagine. A magical life philosophy, really. And it would be your choice. I would instruct on how to be either anonymous or to have many identities. It's tricky to manage both, but it can be done. I like to think life is too short to be only one thing. I would also teach the magical value of being good company to yourself when you're alone, and that you don't have to let everyone into your life. You have value, and you should be choosy. Now, I'm going to answer a question that no one asked me. no one asked me this, but I would like to tell you the name of my favorite song, because I think you'll understand my true nature a little better if I tell you. So, admittedly, it is an old song, but I never hold the age of anything against it, because no person or thing has any control over when they appeared in this world, so age is irrelevant to me. I love this particular song implicitly because I believe you can actually feel the seductive, soul-tingling magic hovering around you in the air as this song plays. It is You Make Loving Fun by Fleetwood Mac. If you can, I ask you to play it on a quality device with proper bass, and you'll hear it. I'm there. I levitate. Tonight's reading at the Midnight Library is brought to you by the Midnight Library. You're welcome in our library, and we hope you stay unharmed. We acknowledge that it's scary, but we hope that you are charmed. We love to see you on the grounds and in our reading room, but try to stay within the bounds to at least postpone your doom. You are loved by your host matron, even if that's hard to believe, especially if you're a patron. She may never let you leave. A permanent guest in our library, a companion of your host. Your bones at rest in our cemetery, and you a floating ghost. Together we will haunt this place. Together we'll break the rules. All with magic and with grace, the living, the dead, and the ghouls. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Midnight Library Ask Me Almost Anything for February. I hope you're all happy and doing well. This month's first question comes from Tiffany, and she inquisitively asks how an admirer of the Midnight Library might become a more permanent guest. Now, since it seems that there are two ways that I could answer this question, I believe I'll attempt to assign my answer both ways. And since I am safely among those of you who are truly on the inside and are firmly on our side, if you understand my meaning, I'll be forthright and say something I suspect you already know. That many people become permanent guests within our fine library because they fail to obey the posted and spoken advisory statements that one shouldn't wander off or go beyond the cordoned off areas of the library. And anyone who foolishly does this may most certainly count themselves guaranteed to become a member of the catacombs beneath our fine library, and or a frustrated ghostly spirit within it. I say frustrated because they cannot haunt the library in the manner they might wish, and are at the beck and call of the other demons and spirits therein. We're not about to have lazy, complaining, or braggadocious ghosts, especially if you've become a ghost by your own volition and failed to heed our kind warnings. Oh, and I do suppose that anyone with a death wish could always come too close to Mr. Darling as he prowls the property and the countryside and the alleyways. Now, if I'm to take this question in a more practical fashion, there are those who voluntarily work behind the scenes to promote and protect and serve the library in more reality-based ways. They propose story content and post on social media, occasionally make additional monetary contributions, and act as monitors and administrators on Facebook. These blessed souls are often in contact with me or Irma or Tess. So, if in fact you feel compelled to take a more active role in the support of our library, you could contact Tess or Irma to see if there's any way for you to become more involved. I don't know that there is, but of course there always may be. Thank you for your excellent question, dear Tiffany. Our next question is a rather personal question from Holly, and Holly would like to know if I have any children. I can safely tell you that there will not be a storyline in which Miranda has any human children, and I'll just leave that there. I actually debated if I was going to answer this question, but ultimately I decided that I would, as there doesn't seem to be any harm in your knowing, especially since the answer is no. Now, I shall endeavor to provide you with a brief analytical assessment as to how this came to be. From reality. When I was a little girl, I rather assumed that I would have children, and I was a very happy child myself and thought it would just be an eventuality that came to be and part of my adulthood. However, I was also an extremely observant child. I was a very big people watcher, and I got that from my mother. She had a very keen eye and could seemingly know things in almost an investigator's eye kind of way about people. So I kind of inherited that a little bit. And believe it or not, and I'll try to explain this, I was an only child, but I did have brothers and sisters. I had siblings that were a good deal older than me. And my mother remarried and had me with my father. And so I had all of these older brothers and sisters who did have children. And they often dropped off their children and babies at my home for their grandparents, which was my parents, to watch. And initially, as a little girl, I loved this. Can you hear what's coming? I learned how to hold and feed and bathe and change a baby and keep them entertained. And also, you know, little children, as they grew, I was small myself, so I was chasing them down. And I was a good extra babysitter for my parents, for their grandchildren. And consequently, I found out how much work it was doing this. And I noticed that my once happy siblings didn't seem to be all that happy after they'd had their children. They would say that they were, but what they did and how they became was in opposition to what they were saying. And they all had children. So I began to wonder what would happen if I didn't. I began to entertain the thought in my teens and try to picture my life in opposition to theirs. I began to wonder what that would be like. And later, I thought briefly that I might. There was a period in my life where I thought that would be a good time to do that. And I have opted out ever since. Not to seem smug or superior in any way. It doesn't seem to be for me. I very much like the quote by Karen Kilgariff of the My Favorite Murder podcast. You can tell from my thick black eyeliner, I'm no one's mother. And I do sort of subscribe to her philosophy. Thank you, dearest Holly, for the question. This last question comes from our dear cat. And she asks if I've ever used a Ouija board. Do I have an answer for you? Of course, Ouija boards are a must in the library. They allow me to keep tabs on the happenings my familiars and demons miss on their reconnaissance missions into the village. They help me to know whom I should hex and to what degree. Mavis Miggins will learn not to say she thinks my nails are too long, too black, and too pointy. Now, in my childhood home, yes, we were in possession of a Ouija board or two. As my mother and older sister, but mainly my mother, was always of a spiritual nature and had had experiences that drew her toward attempting to contact knowing spirits and to gain access to the unknown. She sometimes had luck when she partook of this practice, so... I can tell you that as for myself, I do recall politely participating in several Ouija sessions with my mother and my sister, and I think I was quite a silly child and didn't take it all that seriously. I was probably more of a hindrance as they were attempting to make actual contact with the beyond. I can't tell you a specific tale from my experience. Although, and I don't recall what we asked or what the answers were, I'm sorry. I can tell you that as a child, I was holding a secret that was revealed to my mother via the spirit board. So... when I was about to turn 5, and I was in kindergarten, my school teacher marked the date on the calendar at school. And you know, it's a very big deal when you're about to turn 5. And a neighbor friend of mine, Tina, said she had a present for me. And she gave me a $20 bill on my birthday on the school bus. And I was wildly happy, but I refused to tell anyone who had given me the money. And believe me, everyone tried to get that name out of me. They also refused to take me anywhere that I could spend the money. I remember my mother telling my father that she was just going to ask the Ouija board, and she did. She invited a neighbor friend of ours over late one night. She would only Ouija at night, and they said, I believe it was Spirit, tell us who gave Miranda the money. And the board cryptically but sillily answered, it spelled out Dum Dum, D-U-M-D-U-M. And my mother didn't understand, but the neighbor lady laughed and she said, that's what the other kids call Tina up on the hill, Tina. And the Ouija board was correct and my secret was found out. and Tina was busted, and I was forced to return the $20. Apparently, she had lifted it from her grandmother's purse, and the grandmother just assumed she had lost it somewhere because that was not something that the little girl characteristically did. But she wanted, apparently, to give me something for my birthday. And I had to listen to that story being told well into my adulthood. So, there you have it, Kat. There is one other thing I can absolutely tell you. And that was, I do recall, probably from about the age of 12, I think this happened, the Ouija board began being stored under my bed. And my dreams seemed to happen in reverse. People and horses and cars, anything in motion went backwards. If I was walking within a dream, I walked backwards. So I put the Ouija board under the living room couch, and my dreams returned to normal. And that's absolutely true. I don't know if it was a psychological game I played with myself or what it was, but there's the ending to your story. I hope you enjoyed the story. Thank you, lovely cat. The Midnight Library is proud to be a pillar of the Village Society, a cornerstone of the town's establishment, and a communal gathering place for those seeking secret and forbidden knowledge, and the chance to consort with those of us with secret and forbidden natures. Greetings, spooky lovelies. I'm so pleased to be here speaking with you, our valued patrons. I hope you're all doing well. For anyone in the Northern Hemisphere, I hope spring has caused you to feel more optimistic. I know that it may not seem conducive to my persona, but spring always brings me great hope. We do have spring in the Midnight Library, if you can imagine the darkest pastels, slightly evil bunnies and chicks, and of course, little cheery black shoots emerging from the soil in our many garden beds, miscellaneous grave sites, and future funeral spots. And because it is spring, Mr. Darling is now shedding a whirlwind of fur as he prowls the premises. And he's currently directing our cast of maids in their spring cleaning duties, which ironically involves the removal of said fur. Speaking of our Mr. Darling, many of you who are keen listeners to Astonishing Legends, our father podcast, may have heard Mr. Darling make a somewhat awkward, impromptu appearance on there recently. And I've had several questions passed to me from our little Irma, from our social media accounts, regarding this bizarre occurrence. I can only explain that the library, as you all well know, has many meandering hallways and impossibly dark alcoves and stairwells, and of course, shifting bookcases that lead to still more corridors and back passages, and even a complexity of tunnels beneath the library. And while Mr. Darling has resided in our fine library for many years now, every once in a blue moon he does make a misstep and takes a wrong turn and loses his way. And rumors that there is a tunnel that runs between Blanket Fortiana and the Midnight Library are unfounded. Likely, but unfounded. Thank you to everyone who so caringly inquired as to this mix-up. Next, I should like to address a question that has great logic and common sensibility in the asking of it. Several of you here, as well as a few who have reached out to me by other means, have asked if I would please make a few book recommendations, and inquired about favorite books of mine, books that have made an impression on me or changed my life in some way. So it's taken a while for me to decide, and I do apologize that it's taken this long to address this practical and prudent question. I mean, I have this stupendous library, after all. I only wanted to come up with the way in which I would answer with my little list of books, which still may surprise you, as the list is not all blood and guts, as you might expect. Also, I wanted to answer you honestly, and not to season everything to suit the Midnight Library. So, my reading selections are exactly what you would get if you were to ask me to supply you with a list of my music selections, vast and varying in genre, tempo, and taste. Nevertheless, I shall list a handful for you here now. Buckle in. First, I will happily admit to you that in grade school, I was the only youth in my class to order the book The Witch of Blackbird Pond by Elizabeth George Speer. And I do believe it most certainly colored my thinking. Later, and this may come as a shock to some of you, I was introduced to Living, Loving, and Learning by Leo Buscaglia. And this man and his many books and lectures has set the true tone of my entire life philosophy, which I know seems to run counter to my character as your librarian, but at its heart, even though it's buried under a metric ton of crude, immoral wickedness, the library is meant to be welcoming, loving, and a safe place for everyone with a dark heart to visit and feel at home. And I encourage you to look for Leo Buscaglia's life-changing lectures on YouTube if you're unfamiliar with him, and to perhaps seek out his books. Or if you haven't seen him in a while, to look him up on there. Sadly, he passed away many years ago. Another favorite read of mine is, of course, Jane Eyre by Charlotte Bronte. This book, which I picked up in my early teens, taught me to take in and comprehend complex sentence structures and long, expressive, now antiquated ways of speaking. And the story is a compelling classic, of course. Next, I want to mention a most unusual set of books by Nick Bantock, who I've met, by the way, and they are the Griffin and Sabine series of four books. They are strikingly beautiful. They're a combination of art and correspondence. In fact, you get to personally hold the actual letters and cards exchanged between the two befuddled main characters. A mix-up in time and perhaps parallel universes has caused their mail to reach each other, and you are privileged to read every word they trade, as well as their art and maps, memories, and their growing fondness for one another. Seriously, at least look the books up online and see what is included with them. You won't be disappointed. Lastly, I do have a book that seems a bit more befitting of the Midnight Library. I used to frequent a bookshop that would allow you to trade one book for another in similar condition for a small fee. And I traded Guillermo del Toro's book, The Strain, for Dead Men Do Tell Tales, The Strange and Fascinating Cases of a Forensic Anthropologist by William R. Maples. When I describe this book, I will say something that I only rarely say. It leaves a mark on you, a kind of permanent bruise, one that I'm oddly fond of. The book was published in 1994 and tells in great detail of the grisly findings of human remains and describes the methods used to then decipher the age, sex, ethnicity, and often the means by which they met their timely or untimely end. The backstory of some of the victims reads like the best crime podcast retelling you've ever heard. And there are pictures, so I highly recommend this bizarre old book. If you have or are familiar with any of the books I've listed, I would love to hear from you about them and the impression they've made on you. Or if you take any of my recommendations, I would love to hear your feedback and I'd love to know what you think of my suggestions. And I just decided this moment that I would confess something to you that I don't see any harm in confessing. When I was in high school, a day or two before my very last day of high school, I asked my English teacher, whom I adored, if I could borrow two of the books we had had issued to us throughout the year to copy a few things out of. And he graciously allowed me to do that. And everyone had returned all of the books. They were all in the bookcase, and I still have my own too, and one was the history of American literature, and the other was the history of British literature. And I took them home with me, and there was a place where you could go get some copies made, and I had some poetry and some short stories, and I, made these kind of not very good quality copies from. And on the last day of school, I arrived with them and actually hung on to them all day. I was so very fond of them. And I met my instructor as I was handing them back in. And I mean, he literally had packed up his desk for the summer. And he was saying to me, He said, honestly, you needn't have bothered because all of these are being destroyed, this whole set. He said it's considered antiquated and out of date, and he said they'll be replaced with all new books next year. And he literally said, turn the lights off when you leave the room. I'm like, okay. So I put the two worn copies back on the shelf with everyone else's books. And I stood there for a moment looking at them. And there were several brand new copies of the books, that had never been issued, with pristine spines and pure white paper. Can you tell I really love books? And I lifted off of the shelf two of the brand new, never issued books. And I stole them. I walked right out the door with them When he told me they were going to be destroyed, I couldn't believe how emotional I became in that moment. And it turned me into a thief. I have no regrets. I still have the books. They are still beautiful. I still love them. And I saw my instructor about 2 or 3 years ago in a medical setting. And I told him what I had done. And we both had a good laugh over it, and I feel absolved ever since then. I even feel better having told you. So there you go. That is an absolutely 100% true story. But although I am embarrassed that I stole the books, I feel like I saved them in some way, and I know that they saved me. Thank you, everyone, for your wonderful questions. And thank you for hearing my confession of my book thievery. I promise you, I'm not that big of a criminal. Thank you, everyone, for your support of the Midnight Library. I feel compelled to tell you, honestly, we could not do this without your support. So I thank you, thank you, thank you. And we will see you all very shortly for the beginning of Season 4 of the Midnight Library. I am so pleased that we've come this far, and I am very excited about Season 4. Thank you, everyone. Well, how are you doing by now, my dear? Can you stand so that Mr. Darling might see you safely to the door? Oh my, Professor Steerpike has arrived. We're going to have a little tea together and then travel into the forest because it's it's nice there. Thank you to everyone who has helped the Midnight Library to be forcibly accepted by the Village Council. Your growing patron contributions, sworn oaths, and blood sacrifices allow us to purchase rare books, hire unusual staff and goons, and keeps the Midnight Library open so that those of us with dark hearts have a private place to gather and mingle. If you haven't yet, please consider joining our happy hellish forces. Thank you. Tonight's special reading in the Midnight Library is brought to you by the Witch's All-Seeing Eye. We have a secret weapon you can keep upon your person. No matter what you step in, things can never worsen. The Witch's All-Seeing Eye. It keeps bad luck at bay. Watch all the others cry merrily as you play. The eye within the pentagram, the encircled magic star, sees me no matter where I am and keeps my troubles far. No ointment or stinky salve, it guards you as you fly. It's a watchful seal we have, the Witch's All-Seeing Eye. Juju, amulet, or charm, no matter which term you use. The eye will keep you from harm, from calamity and abuse. The Witch's All-Seeing Eye sees vast and wide and deep. Disaster it defies, 'cause witches never sleep. The Witch's All-Seeing Eye charm can be purchased as a behind-the-counter item at Grimm's Grocers. It's for sale here at the library's information desk and can be seen on the beer mats in the Broom and Fang pub. Rumors that it is my own eye featured upon the charm are unfounded. Thank you for seeing my guest out, Mr. Darling.
What do you think their chances of returning to normal are?
After spending almost an hour alone with you? Let me put it plainly, madam. Your guest, stumbled glassy-eyed from the reading room, mumbled something about a witch leaving a bite mark on their soul, then collapsed and had to be dragged into the Phantom Forest on a top by three demons. How do you think they'll fare?
I think they'll be grateful to survive and become a Patreon patron.
Your balloon never lands, does it, madam?
Never, Mr. Darwin. The Midnight Library is proudly brought to you by everyone at Astonishing Legends. The excellent sound design is by Chris and Jason at Sounds Like an Earful. Keep the Midnight Library open by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/midnightlibrary. Find the League of Lady Gravediggers, the Broom and Fang Pub, and the Witch's All-Seeing Eye merch in our Redbubble shop at redbubble.com/people/midnightlibrary.